Welcome to Buildings and Beyond,
the podcast that explores how we can create a more sustainable built environment
by focusing on efficiency, accessibility, and health.
Hello. In this episode, I spoke with Ryan Merkin, who is a former colleague here at Stephen Winter Associates. He's focused on building energy efficiency before, during, and after his time at SWA. He's currently at Block Power, where he focuses on improving efficiency and electrifying existing buildings. Block Power started in New York City about a decade ago, but they now work across the country. Block Power also has a couple of other services that we touch on. They develop software to help cities target buildings to decarbonize, and they also are involved in training and workforce development. Ryan and my conversation was really mostly about decarbonizing buildings, you know, challenges and successes. That's where he focuses. What was most interesting and maybe gratifying to me was that, you know, affirmation that electrifying buildings is not necessarily straightforward. We've certainly struggled with that here at SWA. Talking to Ryan, there does not appear to be many cookie-cutter approaches to building decarbonization. Natural gas is relatively inexpensive. That is a barrier. And electrification can be quite expensive. It's a tough sell if operating costs are not reduced. Some of Ryan's projects, you know, specific energy efficiency improvements are the only thing that work out for owners. Our conversation focused on how Block Power goes about finding buildings where they can make a difference and figuring out what strategies to implement, what efficiency measures, electrifying space heating, electrifying water heating, or perhaps cooking, how they go about finding buildings where they can make an impact decarbonizing. And the first thing we talked about was building typologies, what types of buildings they focus on.
Typology-wise, and buildings and where we're focused, you know, we get a lot of inquiries from buildings from everywhere, as I mentioned, geographically, and buildings of all shapes and sizes. So we're trying to focus in a little bit on, again, that sort of lower hanging fruit. It's still an enormous challenge to electrify, as you and I think a lot of your listeners know. There's so many factors that go into it. I think I've got maybe eight to go through or so to just kind of talk about typologies. But you know, one of the first ones that I always think about is building height. You know, we've had success in really in low to mid-rise buildings. We could talk about the challenges on, you know, quote unquote high rise and what, you know, what number of floors that might look like to get into a much bigger challenge. I'll also step back and say, you know, we're very flexible on the electrification scope that we do, or, you know, call it a journey. So we may start out small. We may start with some efficiency measures and a little bit of electrification, like looking at just the hot water systems.
Start like the project would be a phased approach. I mean, you would provide a punch list to building owners, or?
Yeah, in some respects, yes, we would present a plan. When we think that, well, depending on the owner's, you know, motivations and budgets and all that good stuff, just from a practical standpoint, you know, technologically speaking, constructability, where do we think the best place they could start on their electrification journey is? Is it the hot water? Is it the heating? Is it both? Are we talking about just, you know, the cooking systems, or just, you know, the opportunity to do a service upgrade to position the building for future electrification and focusing on, you know, perhaps solar first? So it is a very tailored approach.
Efficiency? Does efficiency get into the mix?
It has to. Okay. Yeah, particularly when we're doing conversion of the heating system, you know, we would like to limit and reduce the cost of heating to the extent possible through insulation and air sealing measures, for sure, and envelope measures.
Okay. All right. So those are often in the plan.
Yes.
Okay. The plan. It's not just strictly electrification. It's a little bit more.
Yeah, I'd say we would look at it similar to through the eyes of how you would approach it at SWA. You know, a holistic approach, and considering that any single measure is going to impact something else and have an impact. So
I tend to agree. I mean, there are some programs or some policies that are just pushing electrification anywhere, everywhere, immediately. But So that was a question. Is it really, are you kind of laser focused on electrification, or it sounds like if insulation and air sealing are factors, then that certainly comes into play.
Yeah, 100%. We're definitely, you know, mindful electrification, and really, you know, for the reason that we're sticking with a building for the long term. We'll talk about our financing. If we're going to be putting together a 15-year lease financing, or not, if we're just contracting the project, we're eventually going to build the project, and we're going to be responsible for the outcome and the ultimate success of the project. So we're really not building it and walking away. We're commissioning it. We're monitoring the systems to the extent possible using IoT. And we're hearing from the customers, you know, from day one, how the systems are operating. And we know, you know, a change of HVAC can be a very sensitive thing to attempt to do, because you're just going from something before to something very different after. And that experience may just look a little different to the end user. So we're very mindful of that.
How about, maybe I should have asked you about the process before asking about building types, or maybe we'll jump back and forth. But let's say, you know, you said low to mid rise. Does that mean what? Up, you know, 3 to 6? What does low to mid rise mean?
Yeah, in that range.
One to six, one to four, even one to five. Okay.
Six and above, you know, you start getting into, Where is all my outdoor equipment going to go?
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And how am I going to run all those connection points between the outdoor and indoor units on the exterior? Or we got to go through the building, and that gets disruptive very quickly as you go up in height.
Schools, office, retail, residential, any and all. I mean, I don't know.
Definitely any and all. We've done, majority of our projects are, we're really project agnostic. We look at every project individually and the sector that it's in.
Is there one type that is more common?
Yeah, predominantly we've done mostly multifamily. But we've also had success working in houses of worship. We've done some small commercial space, and you know, I think all larger, retail and schools and other sectors. Everything is, you know, it really just depends on the ease of the project. I could think of a lot of examples where those would be challenging, or some might be really easy. So,
okay, and so it's really. So moderate sized. I mean, you're not talking about single family. We're talking about a reasonable scale. So, you know.
Well, and actually, 10,000 we've done a lot of single family, and
really?
we have. But you know, our preference is to do multifamily, but that's from two units and above. So owner occupied 2+ units and up. So it could be 2 units, it could be, you know, 1,000 units. I think that the building typology will really dictate whether we've got a good project there, or the potential to move a project, you know, forward into implementation.
Okay. Yeah, and I interrupted you, or we went down a rabbit hole. You had a list of 8 things, I think, that kind of a punch list that for you defines a good project or defines a likely project.
Yeah, let's dig into that a little more. So we covered height. Starting point with someone interested in electrification, obviously, a good customer and client is someone who has some inclination towards making these changes. We could start the conversation very much from scratch and educate the customer on, you know, what does it mean to electrify and decarbonize. But it's nice to walk into a situation where there may be already some CapEx planned for a building, that there's an end of useful life situation for the heating system, that they're starting to contemplate, what are we going to do next year? Or maybe there's even an urgent need for a system change out. But there's some planning going on and a budgeting process going on for a change. And so we have a good opportunity there for maybe an intervention where they thought of replacing with same, but they would like to consider some other options. And as you know, electrification isn't a like-for-like type of replacement. We're not replacing a steam boiler with a steam boiler heat pump, right? So we're really changing the dynamics. We're changing.
That'd be a good trick.
That'd be amazing. And I think maybe we'll get there at some point. But right now we're talking about change of the HVAC, including the distribution too.
Yeah.
So I think we maybe on the...
So is that, is that higher on your list? Retrofitting steam, it's a whole different paradigm shift. You know, as you alluded to, have you done buildings? Have you done full retrofit of steam buildings?
We have. We've had some good success there. There has to be an appetite for, the one-to-one swap is not there. And, and a return on investment is unlikely to be there in the conventional sense. So, whereas we looked at this, in our energy efficiency work for decades on, what's the return on investment for an equipment that costs X versus Y, and where's the energy savings? And that's how we justify a project. So most of the time, we're actually not focused on return on investment. Of course, it's there. Of course, we're going to analyze the pre versus what's being proposed and what's the difference. In that list of eight items or checklist, punch list items, the opportunity to do ROI projects are there because you may have an oil heated building that's very wasteful and spending a lot of money. Or you may have an electrically heated building with resistance heat that is also expensive to heat. And that one is really great because the infrastructure for the service to the building for electricity is already there. You're actually going to reduce the electric service needed with a resistance to heat pump project. So not to, to say ROI isn't always possible because it's there and it is in certain cases. But I think
With gas being cheaper than electricity in most of the Northeast, at least, it's a challenge to get savings.
It is. So we will discuss and sell a project on all the other merits of doing electrification. And it depends on what resonates with the owner or with a board. So is it regulatory? Is there an ESG goal or a requirement, internally? Are we looking to just upgrade the building because of end of useful life? And this new system will just provide a much better amenity because now we've got controllable heating and cooling in every room, which we never had before. In a steam building, we have window air conditioners, so we could improve that and get rid of those window units, take them out of the windows. So is this an additional value for the building? Are the units worth more? We think that there is certainly a case there. It's a more modernized amenity. Can you walk off the
street? When there are enough clients out there where if the bottom line, if the money doesn't pencil out, there's enough other benefits, there's enough interest from enough clients for you to stay active, for you to do electrification work.
That's exactly it. And to help with those things because money does is a big motivator. So what we'll do is we'll drop our net project costs by employing incentives. So we're always working with utility and state incentives. There's federal IRA money that's live now and will be in an even more meaningful way after the new year with additional rebates. So reducing project costs is really critical to moving projects forward. When we can and we have a workforce development program, we may bring some of the folks from that program onto a site to contribute some free labor and training, which helps the contractors reduce costs. And as a separate topic, we could talk about the lease financing because we're able to provide a project with no money down and to space the payments out over several years at very good interest rates at the moment. So we got to package all this complicated package of measures together to move things forward for sure.
Okay, so we at least got to number two or three of your list of eight things that make a good project.
All right, we got a few of them in there because we got CapEx, We've got end of useful life situations.
Okay, good.
We've got fuel source, right? So we got oil and electric resistance. Those are great. Gotcha. You want to jump on those.
Absolutely.
Then we talked a little bit about incentives, so and regulatory motivations, right? Okay. In New York City, we've got Local Law 97, which is really, that's going live January 1, 2024. That performance next year is going to count towards a carbon cap for a given building. So, and we've got others like regulations in other cities, like in Boston and Denver and elsewhere. So that will creep up. And I talk about some other building typologies to go back to besides height. Then you have, the conversation about whether we're replacing a central system or does a fairly sizable multifamily have individual systems already with, forced air and furnaces and outdoor condensers for air conditioning. So those may make for very sort of easier electrification projects, less disruptive.
The distributed yeah. already. So, or unitized.
Yeah, or unitized. Right. Individual okay. systems can make for a very good project on lots of different building types. And another one that I have my eye out for and we've had some success with is the individual systems that we haven't been big fans of for many decades, but I think they provide an opportunity for an easier conversion. And that's our terminal units, our package terminal air conditioner, PTAC, the acronym. Where we have those penetrations in the envelope providing heating and cooling individually per room, there's package terminal heat pumps that can fit into that footprint with less disruption and lower costs. So we've got the PTAC sleeves and we've got those kind of smaller conventional air conditioning sleeves where we can position heat pump units now into that footprint and provide heating and cooling into those spaces. So I'm pretty bullish on that as a sector too. And we've had good success there.
That's cool. Yeah, I know a lot of us here are pretty excited about PTHP's package terminal heat pump products that are, historically PTACs have been the thing you install when all you care about is first cost. They have historically been horribly, horribly efficient and incredibly inexpensive to install. I mean, you see them in hotels and really, but they don't have to be. There's no reason why PTACs or PTHPs can't be efficient. It's just that the market historically has been that these are the cheapest, least efficient things out there. But that's changing, which is I think is pretty exciting. Can you give a couple examples of projects that went well or projects that you kind of passed on because maybe there were too many challenges or it wasn't a good fit or?
Yeah, sure. Let's start with the challenged or like the, go back to the, the high rise example. Then I'll give you some, successful project examples. I've looked at high rise buildings. We've looked at that PTHP solution. We just discussed the challenge of doing that. We've looked at, all right, let's start with, the hot water. Usually that could be a non-disruptive type of measure. We're talking about a boiler room, a back of house type of deal. Let's not disrupt the distribution on a high-rise building and get into that level of construction if it's, not feasible. What if we took the hot water offline, which will make the boilers run longer, and we'll start the electrification process? Just taking the hot water over to electric may be a great measure for an early Local Law 97 compliance for this first period. The challenges you're seeing there on large scale buildings for hot water is I think we have solutions and technology that's available today. I think it is developing and will get better and less expensive over time because that's in my experience has been the challenge on high rise domestic hot water is the cost. I mean yes I know I you know. Trying to sell you and others on the concept of not looking at an ROI. But when you look at domestic hot water on a high-rise building, the cost of replacement with a heat pump central system could be 5x the cost of a conventional system.
And that's like air source or ground source either, I guess?
I mostly have looked at air source.
Okay.
But you know, then that's before you get into the operating costs of the, you know, disparities between a gas versus electric. So almost, I'd say near impossible right now on that scale to do high rise domestic hot water electrification, at least when it's centralized.
5x more storage and storage space, which is, I think, at a premium.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's been a big challenge. I started out being more optimistic about finding a way to get a foot in the door to start a journey. And I think we have some time before the costs just come down, and there's going to be a lot more development on that equipment too.
Yeah.
And other approaches that we might not even be, you know, thinking about right now.
Yeah. We're seeing it. I mean, a lot of our new construction projects are at least looking at these options, if not planning to include them, you know, in design or construction right now. And we have one or two completed that have these systems in it. And it's going to be more expensive than gas. It's going to be much more expensive to install. You have to have a client that's really committed to it, you know, that really is sold on not having the fossil fuel on site. But I tend to agree with you that retrofit, it's a bit further down the road for retrofits to be really, really practical.
Yeah, and that's okay. Well, you know, we got other buildings to, you know, to work on in the meanwhile, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we used the example before of the garden style PTAC. We've had some great successes there. We have had a series of buildings that were on, had gas PTACs, so they were unitized individual gas PTACs. The same problems or issues that you were referencing before, that they're not the most robust equipment. They don't last that long. The original PTACs, that is, they're noisy. They tend to break down, and you know the number of manufacturers isn't really that diverse. So you're kind of locked into a few different manufacturers out there. So really repurposing the heat pump technology into that footprint and providing equipment that has, a 10 or a 12 year warranty, that's a game changer for a property that had PTACs that were failing, on a 5 year lifespan. And not to mention they're quieter and more controllable and all that. So getting that technology out there, it's been very successful. The residents of this building who were paying directly for the gas heating before, and we switched them to the PTHPs, efficient ones, I hate to even put this out on a recording to say, like, we've had no complaints, but we really haven't. And it's, we've gone a couple of winters now or full years with the new equipment, and we're continuing to change over to this new equipment. So I feel really good about that work.
So that was natural gas conversion from a gas-fired PTAC to PTHPs with no fossil space heating.
Correct.
Okay. What? Any insulation? Any air sealing? Any window improvements?
No. That was a straight retrofit. The new box that the PTHPs come in we paid attention to sealing the outside, sealing the inside, and the box itself is insulated. So we think there was, much less infiltration. We did some blower door testing and had some, okay or decent reductions in just the infiltration through the old PTAC versus the new system. So it kind of came with its own air sealing measure, if you will.
Okay, cool. And so in this one project, or maybe you've done a couple such projects, is that kind of, was that it? Was that the scope of work? Is the PTHPs?
In that project, just the PTHPs. We were looking at some additional work there to, now that they've gone to gas, gone away from gas heating and they've got electric. The only thing the residents are left with for gas is their stoves, and now they're in this funny situation where the residents are paying a gas bill for their cooking. But really, if you use one therm a month, you may still pay $25 or $30 because you got to pay a base charge. So that's probably not worth it. And I think with the IRA money coming in, we'll look at upgrading the electric there to provide a 220 for the cooking, and then bring an induction cooktop in And then the residents would, you know, save that $25 a month, you know, charge basically. And I think that pencils out, could pencil out really nicely with IRA incentives.
Interesting. Cool. Cool. So one big question is, you know, you mentioned early that you one of the activities of Black Power is workforce development. A huge challenge in, I think a huge challenge in electrification, or I mean construction in general, is just the lack of skilled trades. I won't generalize economy wide. I mean, all kinds of industries are experiencing shortages of all kinds, but I know my industry, you know, knowledgeable, experienced, savvy heat pump contractors, for example. I know some great ones, and I've learned tons from great heat pump contractors. I've seen some crap installed also, and there are too many kind of just slapdash installations from contractors that don't, you know, hopefully just don't know what they're doing rather than don't care what they're doing. But there's just too few contractors overall, which is just jacking the prices up and up and up. It's a huge challenge. I guess, how does that affect your actually electrification work, and how does your workforce development activities integrate into that or help that?
Yeah, you're once again, spot on. There's definitely a shortage in the trades, and a shortage in the number of quality installation contractors that we can trust to do really good high quality work. Because as you know, the installation of heat pumps, it's pretty sophisticated equipment, and while the installation may in some cases not be overly complicated, there are points along the way where there's critical installation methods that are critical to making the system work well for the long term. And if some of these things aren't done well during installation, you could have failures in the first few years, and it may not be something that someone picks up on during construction because they just missed it. So we have to we put a heavy emphasis on not only commissioning, but oversight, construction management, and project management to be there for some of those critical junctures when things are being put together and installed. So we're witness to certain techniques that they're using because we've learned our lessons and we've seen those challenges on projects. So we need to bring more contractors or more skilled labor into the workforce. That's where this workforce program has come together. And it's also been with, we're not going to solve this crisis without bringing really everyone into the fold and giving opportunities to those who are also been, underserved. We think that's a big key to bringing a lot more installation, skilled labor into the process. So, our workforce program in New York City is training thousands of people with sort of basic skills in getting into construction, and then more specialized skills on actual installation work.
What does that mean? I don't know. This is probably not your wheelhouse, but what are the basic skills? What are the basic skills, and then what are the more specialized skills?
Yeah, the specialized skills are heat pump installation and solar installation, okay. And then working your way backwards into electric training, plumbing training, general construction, carpentry, swinging a hammer, just really also at a basic level, showing up to a work site, what to expect from your boss, how to communicate, how to be there on time and be ready, willing, and able to, be flexible in a very dynamic environment. So sometimes, we start with just some of those basics there before bring them back to do more skill training.
Do you have facilities? Do you have shops, buildings where you can learn how to sweat pipes or learn electrical stuff or learn learn HVAC.
Yes, in three boroughs of New York City, we have training facilities that are up and running, and then so we use that as the in-house training program, and then we have placement to our projects and with our contracting network. Think about it as sort of an extended interview. In the case of New York City,
the training as an extended interview?
Yes. Oh, the training, okay. and the on-site work that they're doing on an actual project. Instead of having a Zoom interview one time as a snapshot in time to impress someone, they're given this 4-week or up to 8-week runway to prove themselves on site. Their labor is offset by the city helping to contribute to that. So we're trying to find those who are best suited to do that work on site. And the contractors do have to take responsibility and have the willingness to open up their projects to others. But it's been a real win-win situation because they've been able to also use them outside of the program and bring them into more full-time work, of course, if things look good during that interim period. So we like it as, think about it as this extended interview process where they get to really try out and mold some of these folks. Yeah.
Cool. All right. We've been talking for a while. One thing I wanted to ask was, like, the number of buildings you've renovated or electrified over the past decade. I guess Black Power's been around for a decade. I think you said, didn't you say 10-ish years?
10 years, yes, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, what's the impact? How many buildings have you gotten to? How many buildings have you electrified?
Well, we've done work in just over 1,000 buildings. That includes the universe of energy efficiency and electrification.
Okay.
So we've definitely have been in a lot of projects and have seen a lot of ways in which we could address all sorts of small and large and deep retrofits. And on the electrification side, I think that number is probably around 10% of that total, where we've done electrification
work. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Gotcha. That's not necessarily 100% off fossil fuels. It's just the elements that you can make work, like the PTHP replacement that you suggested.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. We've done the full Monty and gone heating, hot water and cooking and gone 100%. But in a lot of cases there's, it's going to be a step by step and it's going to be an incremental approach.
All right, last question then. If we talk again in 5 years, what do you hope we'd be talking about?
Good question. I think we're unquestionably going to see a lot more solutions, a lot more equipment that'll provide
technology.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that has been, I think, off and running and, in research and development, particularly with the ability to replace, more centralized systems, where the distribution doesn't have to be changed. So, air to water heat pumps that can provide, warm temperature loops, hot water temperature loops for hydronic heating systems. I think we're getting close already, but I would think in 5 years, there's going to be the ability to do that much more easily. So that one, I'm pretty optimistic on. I think there'll be a lot more solutions there that we can deploy.
Thanks much to Ryan for joining. I encourage folks to head to the show notes for more info on what he's up to. There are links to a few example Black Power projects. And also is a list of the 8 criteria that Ryan mentioned that are kind of guidelines for finding good decarbonization opportunities. We bounced around that list a lot, but in the show notes, there is a concise list of 8 items. Show notes are at swinter.com/podcast. Check out the careers page at Sprinter.com if you are looking for opportunities. We have openings in most, if not all, of our main locations: Washington, D.C., Manhattan, Connecticut, and Boston. Thanks much to the podcast team here, including Trisha Carr and Ian Slakis. Ian did most of the editing for this episode. And thank you for listening.